This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I didn't quite get this put down straight, so I'm just going to straighten it up a little bit. Interestingly enough, I am leaving work a little bit early. I think I mentioned last week. No, stop. Just a second. I can't get to the button to stop that. One moment. Haven't quite got this all put together yet. Okay, so I'm leaving a little bit early, even though I'm leaving earlier now anyways, because I'm picking up Aiden from school for the rest of the school year, which, you know, isn't that many more weeks, so we'll be fine there. But I'm leaving even earlier today because Liz and Alan and the grandkids are heading to London. So this is their 20th year anniversary. They've been saving up for a number of years to go to London for their 20th anniversary, and they're taking off today, going to be gone for about 10 days, so they are just, I'm sure, going to have a wonderful time. They've got all their stuff planned out, what they want to see, what they want to do, yada, yada, yada. And so it's actually 1:45. We're leaving the house at 2:15, going to go pick up the kids, going to head to the airport. I drop them off at the airport at 3:15. Then head back to Pleasant View and grab Aiden from school and then take him back home. And then Dustin will be to our house at 5:30-ish tonight, and then we have small groups at 6:30, so it's going to be a full day. Writing is going fine. I'm working on the cover now. I've about got the cover roughed in, have some tweaking to do on it. But that all seems to be going fine. Again, I used ChatGPT for images, and then I'm using another tool called Freepik, F-R-E-E-P-I-K, freepik.com, and I signed up for a month for $20, and it's just so interesting, because it will do all the outpainting stuff. And I mentioned this last time I did a cover, but like on this one, I've got a image of a young woman floating in the sky with a bunch of billowing, you know, a dress that has a lot of billowing fabric in it. But when ChatGPT rendered the dress for me, it was more of a portrait. And so the edges of the dress were cut off. So you just take it into this freepik.com, put it in there, tell it what size you want the resulting image to be and what you want to be in those things. And I just said, finish the dress on both sides and place it against a starry field. And it gives you like 16 different options of the ways that it's finishing the dress. And you just go through and pick the one that you want, or you can do retouching. You can take any photograph or any image and just have a little tool where you can just color over what you want to replace, and then you just tell it what you want that replaced with, and it just does it. Sometimes the results are scary. Sometimes they're pretty good. And so, you know, you just pick through and find the one you want. You can just keep regenerating it until you get what you want. I had this young lady also needed to be looking down. In the prompt, I had asked that she be looking down, but these image prompts, you don't always get what you ask for. I'm having trouble right now convincing ChatGPT that I want a gargoyle that is facing away from the camera with a mouse sitting on its head, looking back over its shoulder with a worried expression. Yeah, not happening. I get so tickled because it says, oh, here's your image of a gargoyle facing away from the camera, except the gargoyle is facing towards the camera or just off center of the camera. And it's like, no, the gargoyle needs to be facing away. Okay, here's your modified image of the gargoyle facing completely away from the camera, and it's still looking at the camera. I'm like, no. I want to see the back of the gargoyle without many facial characteristics. Oh, well, here's your image of the back of the gargoyle showing no facial features. The face, I mean. No, that's not right. So, because that's the last final little piece, and then I have some tweaking to do. I would hope that I'm going to get this cover done this weekend. Because if I can get the cover done this weekend, then I can put the actual final print copy of the book together, get those ordered. That's book 22. Start talking about taking in beta readers for it. And then I can get my taxes done. And then once I have my taxes done, I start on book 23. And then there will only be two left, which is amazing. So writing's going fine. Costumes are going fine. I'm actually... This is Dustin. So, just a second. Hey, buddy, what do you know? So, what's up? Okay, that's cool. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Good for you. Right. Right. Huh. Oh. Okay, cool. Perfect. 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 Yeah, spring break. Yeah. Right. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Cool. Sounds good. See ya. Okay, good. No emergencies. Yay! So, and he took a big test today and got 100% on his paramedic stuff. So, whoop whoop! We're also trying to figure out what to do about spring break stuff. I mean, Nett and I could keep Aiden at the house all next week and I could just work from home. But then he's not around kids. And that's not good. Because, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do at the house when he's with us. Within reason. We don't allow throwing fits and all that kind of stuff, but he just putters around and, you know, plays with blocks and does his own thing. And of course, when you're in a school environment, you have to kind of conform to what other people are doing. And so both Dustin and I agree it would be better to have something else, but we don't have Sparks and next week is spring break. But there is a preschool / daycare in Fair Grove that has watched Aiden before when he was three, but the owner of that used to be in charge of Springfield Special Education, and so she knows. He did real well there, so we're trying to see what the situation is there, see if we can figure anything out. Anyways, hopefully there won't be another phone call before I get home, so my schedule has just loosened up a little bit. Yay! So I just have to get the kids to the airport now. I don't have to run back and get Aiden. So not working on anything for the costumes right now. I do have that in queue for, we've talked about Classic Movie Day. That's coming up in May. So I still have some weeks, you know, before I have to get that done. And I'm just focusing right now on getting the book done so I can get my taxes done, so, you know, move on to book 23, and then once I'm in that mode, then I'll start looking towards getting the other done. So it's good. I, in the continuing saga of people who are getting towards, oh yeah, you know, Victor Davis Hanson had done a video what did he call it? He called it the phenomenon of Now They Tell Us. And he was going through like five or six things that there were a whole bunch of us that this was common knowledge to, and yet now we've got people coming out, and I've mentioned other things. I guess one of the new things now is that Francis Collins, who was the head of the NIH, I think, at the time there was COVID, now he's really reflective on the fact that, you know, just prioritizing that people don't die for COVID. You know, there were some side effects to all those lockdowns, and it would have been better if we just considered some of those side effects as opposed to just looking at trying to minimize deaths. Oh, really? Really? Okay. Yeah, it probably would have been better. Except Francis Collins was on the front line of bashing anyone who might say, you know, there's more to look at here. I mean, when the Great Barrington Declaration came out, where they said in that, we're not handling this correctly, we need to tranche the population, we already know that COVID only kills old people and people with comorbidities, so let's take care of them, let's let everybody else go back to work, let's get our kids back in school, you know, if necessary, let's hire young people who have already had COVID to take care of the elderly so they won't be a threat to them. That was all in the Great Barrington Declaration. And it just basically said, look, we're not doing a good job of this. Well, Francis Collins, according to emails that were released, sent an email to Anthony Fauci to say, we need to take this down. We need a brutal takedown. I don't know if he used brutal, but we need a brutal takedown on this Great Barrington Declaration and get this out of the way. Why? Because they wanted to keep everybody locked down. They wanted to keep people, you know, the country in turmoil. They didn't want a sense of normalcy because they weren't going to put as many vaccines in as many arms if they didn't keep everybody stirred up and anxious. And now it's 4 years later, and now everybody's reflective. So that had to come out this week. Of course, also came out this week that, you know, Joe Biden really wasn't doing that well as president, and a whole bunch of stuff that was just signed with auto pens, apparently including some of the pardons right there at the end. So Joe Biden doesn't know what's going on. Who's issuing these pardons and just signing it with his pen? It's so interesting. And then the other thing, I guess, that came out recently was that the FBI finally said, oh, yeah, we did have some informants at the January 6th thing. Yeah, we actually did. But they probably would have been there anyways. Well, now the number is like 26. There were 26 FBI informants at that January 6th rally. That's not suspicious. You know, and then you've got, what was the other one that came out? It was something to do with, a buddy of mine wrote me and he said he was listening to a podcast with a financial advisor who had gotten COVID really bad. And so he started to doing some research. And when he got COVID really bad, they wanted to put him on a ventilator. And he said no. And he did recover eventually. But then he started doing research and it was some ridiculous number. It was like plus 85% of people who were put on a ventilator died. And then he said he started to do some more research and he found out that if a hospital put a COVID patient on a ventilator, the hospital got $39,000. I think it was $39,000. And then if that hospital patient died at the hospital, they got another $60,000. So, you know, the incentive is if we put you on a ventilator and you die, the hospital's going to get almost $100,000. Well, when you incentivize people, it's amazing what they'll do. So there's all this Now They Tell Us stuff. That's not what we're talking about today, though. So that's just kind of that side thing. We've been watching all these. Oh, really? Thanks. We didn't know that, but we did. And why didn't you? What were your motivations then, and why are they different now? Victor Davis Hanson thinks that people are just trying to cover their backsides is what they're trying to do, because they're worried about the blowback, they're worried about getting sued, you know, they're worried about getting arrested, they're worried, and so now they're coming out and going, oh, no, you know, I really had some questions about what we were doing. Oh, okay, sure. So anyways, people will be people. The topic that I came across today, because it had one thing that was, I maybe knew this, but this really puts things in a different light. So anyways, this is a guy who used to be an ex-pharma rep, and he has investigated the health industry and the insurance industry and the pharma industry, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, he had some startling statistics, like the number one cause of bankruptcy in America is healthcare costs. You know, so if you have some sort of a major, major medical thing happen, it just sinks you. And he's talking about the roots of a broken healthcare system are complex and involve multiple factors like diet, lifestyles, and the quality of food choices. But he said at the same time, there's been a drastic increase in the number of improved ingredients in American food. And you've heard this stat before. In Europe, they have about 700 ingredients that are approved for food. From the 1980s to today in America, it's 10,000. You know, so why do we need 10,000? The primary care system, doctors only have like 6 minutes with a patient, and all of it's driven by corporate capture. There are incentive structures, you know, like the insurance companies, he says, are often seen as the hidden monsters in the healthcare landscape, with many people unaware of how they operate and affect care. The revenue generated by the five largest insurance companies greatly exceeds that of the top pharmaceutical companies, highlighting their dominant role in healthcare. So you say, wait, what? How is that? Because insurance companies control access to doctors, and they do everything they can to make sure that you can't move forward and get the care you need. But in addition to that, a while ago, the pharmaceutical industry and the government, there was a law that was passed that they sent up pharmacy benefit managers, the PBMs. So these PBMs are supposed to negotiate for lower prices with the drug providers. That's what they're supposed to do, you know, on behalf of individuals. Well, the thing about it was, is the insurance companies saw that role is really critical. And so they bought up all the companies that have the PBMs in them. And that means you've got the insurance companies that are negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies for the price of drugs. Now, that at first glance seems like, well, yeah, that's good, because the insurance companies are going to be really interested in having lower drug prices so they don't have to pay out as much. And this is the key. No, they don't. And the reason that they don't is because they are negotiating with the drug companies, and nobody told the insurance companies they were not allowed to tell the pharmaceutical companies that they deserve to get a kickback. So you actually have drug companies that are giving kickbacks to insurance companies every time drugs are provided and prescribed. So the insurance companies really don't have that much of an incentive to see that Americans get healthier. In fact, if Americans don't get healthier and they have to be on a lot of drugs, the insurance companies make money. Because every time there's a drug prescription written, it's 30% goes to the insurance company. So the insurance company is raking in the money. I mean, they're just raking in the money from all the drugs that are prescribed. Because they're doing the negotiations for the drug prices. How's that for an insidious cycle? Looking for the mail, don't have it. I'm just gonna, looks like our house cleaner is here. She's getting ready to do her thing, so I'm gonna wander down, probably go to the bathroom real quick here, and then wander down, pick up the kids. And anyways, so I am home. I gotta go get the kids. We gotta do the thing. Have a wonderful weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.